he is actually suffering from dementia, you know.
Yeah, deteriorating.
And I'm just so disgusted with the DNC, like I said, you know. I just feel like they've... They'd rather see Trump win than Bernie, and that's really gross. So
yeah, I hear you about that. Well, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
Take care.
I'd ask you more, but we're really out of time. So thank you. All right. Well, thank you, Tammy, our engineer, our public affairs director, and thank you, the audience, for calling in and letting us hear from you. I really appreciate it. I didn't know many of you, and it was really good to hear from you. So thank you for doing that. I want to tell you right now that we're in the springtime, and this is when we would normally be having our fundraising. We would have our spring membership drive, which is, by the way, I miss it. It's a lot of fun. It's when, as a volunteer, you get to see all the other volunteers. Now we just come from our voices. But I wanted to tell you that we still need your support. Ask you to donate if you can. If you go to our webpage, kboo.fm/give, you can give right there. If you open your phone app, it tells you how to give right there. We still need your dollars. And a wonderful member of you out there in the audience has said they will match up to $20,000 that's given in during the springtime. So please, if you can, not if it's too difficult for you, if you're one of those who can, make a donation to KBOO today. And thank you for listening.
This Friday, May 1st at 11 a.m. for KBOO's first online live webinar and Q&A. The subject is COVID-19 in Palestine and Israel. We will hear from guest speakers like Dr. Osama Tenos, a pediatrician specialist based in Haifa, Richard Silverstein of the Jewish Bloc Tikkun Olam, and Dr. Yasser Abu Jahame, the Director General for Gaza Community Mental Health Program. Our speakers will discuss the conditions for Palestinians inside the West Bank and Israel, as well as highlight the broader implication for any nation and any minority group in the world fighting against the virus. For more information and registration for this event, go to kboo.fm/kboowebinar. You must register online. For any questions, please email Public Affairs Director Tammy Apteis at publicaffairs@kboo.org. Again, that's COVID-19 in Palestine and Israel, KBOO webinar, Friday, May 1st at 11 a.m.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
It makes you such a threat. We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Uchasha, akan tu uchasha. Owe to na kecha makhaki la akan ompi. Owa huto pa na hupa hu yukhami. Taka uskan skan ompi kile na yuha. Makhaki la. Akan tchan ka taka wa echa ki na ke he on. O na ha ohoki chila mani pikte. Makhaki la ohoki la moshi kila. He on heche. Le on yuta.
Datangi mai eraro eave kama
yata. Tarenga. Ambete washte, chante washte na pech use up yellow, le unkipiki he washtelo. Hoyata huna unpi oholo oshkati wichoni. Greetings and good day and welcome, my relatives. I shake your hands with good feelings in my heart and the whole world. It's a beautiful day. It's good for all of us to be here. And let the people hear your voice respectfully. Celebrate life in addition to relativity. This is First Voices Radio. I send you greetings and strength from the east gate of Turtle Island, where the sun and the water touch the earth at once. And our website is firstvoicesindigenousradio.org. I want to thank you for your generosity, as always, and for being here. You know who you are, and without you, we cannot continue. And I'm your host, Teokas and Ghost Horse. This is an all-native hosted, all-native produced First Voices Radio, now in its 28th year broadcasting. And First Voices Radio producer is Liz Hill. Welcome to the 1 in 98 affiliate FM stations that carry First Voices Radio. Thanks to those of you who monitor this program, a heartfelt thank you. Now, let's count some coup. Andre Fulcek, philosopher, novelist, filmmaker, investigative journalist, poet, playwright, and photographer, who is a revolutionary internationalist and globetrotter who fights against Western imperialism and a Western regime imposed on the world. He's covered dozens of war zones and conflicts from Iraq to Peru to Sri Lanka, Bosnia, Rwanda, Syria, Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Timor-Leste. And Andre has produced and directed several documentary films for the left-wing South American television network Telesur. His films deal with diverse topics from Turkey and Syria to Okinawa, Kenya, Egypt, and Indonesia. Andre's many books include Revolutionary Optimism, Western Nihilism, The Great October Socialist Revolution Impact on the World and Birth of Internationalism, and Exposing the Lies of the Empire. Andre's investigative works appear in countless publications worldwide. He frequently speaks at revolutionary meetings as well as at principal universities worldwide. So more can be found about Andre at Andre, andrevltchek.weebly.com. He tweets at andrevltchek. Welcome, Andre. Today's guest is Andre Vicek. I'd like to welcome him again to First Voices Radio. His journeys across the globe and bringing us to realizations of intelligence, and I mean by intelligence, is what is not heard between the lines, that we are indeed looking at the news between the lines. And his thoughts and his reporting, he reported about Indonesia, capital in Borneo, and a rural misery to Grody, dreams of urban glory. And I wanted to bring Andre on to talk a little bit about what's going on in parts of the world that are very hidden and out of sight. And I'd like to welcome you to First Voices Radio, Andre. Welcome.
Dear Augustine, hello. It's great to be with you again.
Andre, you know, there's quite a few questions here, and I just wanted to begin by asking, you spent time in that area in Indonesia, and some things that we just don't get. It's almost like a lapse of time where they're just now trying to build or catch up to what the West or the U.S. and Europe was already doing 30 years ago. So it's almost watching something that you know is going to die in the end anyway, because it has to do a lot with extracting from the earth and not realizing the indigenous peoples that have been, you know, sustaining themselves all along this time. But now we're talking about a new shining city on the hill, so to speak, the Providence of Indonesia. Could you give us an update on all of this?
Well, yes. Actually, the situation in Indonesia particularly in connection with this planned new capital, is very tragic. Indonesia is the fourth most populous country on earth. It has 270 million people officially, and some friends of mine, statisticians, even UN statisticians, claim that it's not true, that there is more than 300 million people, and many of them are unaccounted for because they don't really want to include into their statistics the poorest of the poor. So the decision, an attempt to move the capital city from Jakarta to Borneo Island is because the capital city, present capital city, Jakarta, has around 20 million people, including the suburbs, and it is sinking. It's literally sinking. It's overpopulated. It's in a horrible shape. The traffic jams are the worst in the world, and so is pollution periodically. And it's becoming very quickly unlivable. You know, you can people don't date anymore because they it would take them 2 hours, 3 hours to drive each way to see each other. They don't meet. Everything is becoming virtual, and the misery is just absolutely horrific. So the president, very ambitious president Jacobi, former furniture maker, a businessman, a very good friend of Donald Trump, actually came up with this idea to move the capital to the third largest island on Earth, which is Borneo, third largest after Greenland and Papua. And you know, he's a megalomaniac. He just has this enormous business kind of concept dreams. And he thinks that he can build something like, he keeps talking about Dubai, he keeps talking about Manhattan, he keeps talking about Brasilia. But, you know, Indonesia is a very poor country. It's actually... it cannot even put together a decent sidewalk in the capital city. And imagining that there will be $33 billion spent on something like that smells like a key to corruption. Now, you have to understand one thing, and our listeners have to understand one thing about Indonesia. You correctly mentioned about catching up and all that, but actually Indonesia is a turbo capitalist concept which exists since 1965, when the socialist and wonderful president, father of the nation, Sukarno, was overthrown on orders from the United States, Australia, and UK by General Suharto. In that time, between 2 and 3 million people died. Almost all members of the Communist Party were killed. Teachers were killed. One third of the teachers of Indonesia were murdered, and the military had to was substituting in the classes teaching. The military, can you imagine? And they destroyed everything socialist, everything communist, everything. Left-leaning, they privatized everything, and Indonesia became like absolutely right-wing concept, economically supported, ideologically supported by the Berkeley University. You know, the same that later happened in Chile when they overthrew Allende's government, and Chicago School of Economics was actually drawing the blueprint for the so-called economic development of the country. So in Indonesia, they privatized everything, and there is nothing public. There is no public beach anymore. There is no public riverfront. and so on. And basically, the Borneo island, where they want to move that capital, is absolutely devastated. It used to be a paradise on earth. It used to be inhabited mainly by the Dayak indigenous tribes. Wonderful culture, wonderful people with their long houses and their socialist structure of society long before Karl Marx was even born. They had their own way of life, their own way of governing the society, and very gentle people, very beautiful culture. Now it's all gone because of in order to plunder the island, Jakarta introduced so-called transmigration. In Indonesian, it's called transmigrasi. When the people from Java and Sulawesi and elsewhere would be encouraged to move into Borneo and make Dayak people minority in their own land. And not only that, concessions, so-called business concessions on Borneo amount to more than 100%, 120%. So actually there is more land was sold to private businesses than there is actually land available on the whole island. So everything is covered by palm oil plantations. Rivers are poisoned by mercury because of gold mining. Hills are leveled with the ground because of coal and other mining. Creatures of all kind are basically destroyed, and so are the tropical forests. So from one of the most stunning parts of the world with one of the greatest cultures, Borneo, where they are trying to move the capital from Jakarta, is actually an absolute disaster. And when you fly over the island, you want to cry because it's all black and burnt and destroyed and covered by palm oil.
Andrei Vicek, you in your article, you showed an image of a young girl who basically says that, but we've got 4G. And that is sort of the selling of a promise, but yet underneath the abject poverty that 4G has brought, there's still not the feeling of what the people are doing there. They're, as you would say, submissive, melancholy submission. And what are the people actually able to do, if anything, about the total, as you say, the rural slums versus the urban slums? I've never heard that perspective of rural slums versus urban slums, which makes sense because it's just the poor part of the city. Here we got rural slums, so we're talking about the whole island has become very poor, and empty promises of this new government of Suharto.
Yes, well, to explain to you how the village in Borneo looks and feels, imagine a road, not very well paved road, but a road nevertheless, with quite a substantial traffic, and then you have houses usually made from plywood or very poor houses licking the sides of the road, because in Indonesia, actually, closer to the road you are, more wealthy you are considered to be. If you are you know, 2 minutes walk from the road, you are already considered poor. So everybody is sitting on the road. And the village is actually surrounded by palm oil plantations or other concessional, economic or business entities. So if you are a child or if you are adult, you have no place to go. You know, forget about this rural paradise of blue rivers and fields, green fields, and animals, and all that. No, the concessions, the business enterprises are coming straight to the backyard of your house. So all you have is actually the road. So what can you do if you are if you have at least some money? You buy a scooter. They call them motorbikes here. Go there. I mean, it's a some kind of a cheap Honda or Yamaha, self-polluting, dangerous, cheap. They give you credit on it. So that's all you have, because there is no public transportation either. And all you do is a part of your work on the palm oil plantation. You are just riding that scooter, usually illegally when you are young. They start like at the age of 14, 13, 12 even. And you drive up and down this one road. And it's nothing. There is nothing you can do. There is mosque, of course, or if you are in the Christian part, there is a church, and that's the center of social life. And then you watch, Hollywood films at night of the lowest quality. You eat food which is actually full of hormones and very dangerous chemicals. And people are very sick because water is polluted with mercury or with chemicals that are used for palm oil plantations. And that's your life. Now, rural slums are all over Indonesia. They're also in some parts of Africa, by the way. But it is very rare to see this kind of a situation anywhere in the world. Well, you see in India some, but in Indonesia, you don't expect it because the country is promoted by Western media as some kind of a democracy and middle-income country and the biggest economy. Well, of course, it's of Southeast Asia. Of course, it's the biggest economy of Southeast Asia because it has 300 million people. You know, well, Singapore has six. So, it is a very well hidden secret in the West, because Indonesia was doing everything what the West told it to do. It is supplying raw materials to all countries in the West, from palm oil to gold to uranium, coal, everything. It's a very rich. It's actually a very rich country when it comes to natural resources. And like Congo in Africa, the richer it is, the more miserable is life of the people.
Andre, you described something that I can see across the planet, the places I've been, that you can stand up in a hill and look for miles and miles all around, and you see almost the total destruction of deforestation, the mining, and all the huge machines and all the so-called civilization just destroying everything so that people could have a cell phone, so that people can drive, so that people can have their Hollywood films. What scale of destruction are we talking about once you go to these islands that you have gone to Borneo and to Kalimantan? I think you journeyed there also. Is that the same story going on from island to island, area of Indonesia?
Yes, unfortunately, the worst part is Papua, but we don't have access to Papua. As a foreigner, I was only once in Papua, and I'm Indonesianist. I work in it all over the country, and I don't have access there. There is a genocide, third genocide in half a century. First genocide was 1965-66, the coup that I mentioned, supported by the West. The second genocide in Indonesia was the occupation of East Timor, where they managed to murder around 30% of the population. And now the Papua, where more than 100,000 people, and that's official, that's what Western human rights organizations are talking about. 100,000 people are dead, and probably much, much more. It's just we don't have access. And there are all these freeport, there are all these huge mining companies from Canada, Australia, UK, United States operating. And, it's a very similar situation as in Brazil, where you would open the indigenous cultures in somewhere in Amazonia or in Orinoco Basin, and basically expose them to everything from but serious to absolutely unsavory way of life that that the West is bringing. Now, in Venezuela, they didn't do this even during the right-wing government, and of course they don't do it now. These tribes are very much protected. In Brazil, you know what is happening now with Bolsonaro. It's becoming really a disaster. But in Papua, I can say that I know what's happening simply because I have been only once to West Papua, I worked in Papua New Guinea, across the border on the same island many times when I lived in Oceania, and I know these people and I love these people. I think it's and you cannot really even call it one group of people because there is so many tribes and so many languages spoken, and these people are absolutely not ready, and they don't want to have any contact with the Western world, because Western world means what? It means plunder. It means cutting the forests, mining, and reducing these people to the state of animals. It's what they do to them in from the testimonies that I heard. It's what they do to them in West Papua. Indonesians basically don't care at all what is done to the Papuan people. They come there, they open the forest, these people get exposed, they get hungry because suddenly they have no way of hunting or living their usual life. So they are forced to convert to Islam. They are forced to, and in exchange for that, they give them at least some pittance periodically. And the pride is broken. You know, these very proud people, hunters, and with their own languages, with their own culture, with their own way of even raising children. You know, they suddenly become beggars. They have to come to the colonizers, to Javanese colonizers, and beg them for food. They have to accept their religion. They have to basically accept the occupation of their land. And it is horrific. And the West again does nothing, because these are Papua has some of the greatest wealth in terms of raw material. And they support Indonesia because Indonesian retired military personnel are actually protecting the mines, and they are brutalizing the Papuan people. And they don't care. They don't care really even the population in Java. They all know about what's happening in Palestine, but they don't know what their own military is doing and their own colonizers are doing actually to the outer islands. So it is a tragedy everywhere where you go. Java is Java learned from Dutch. They became colonizers themselves, and they very well used the colonialist tactics that Europeans and North Americans have been using all over the world. They learned very fast, so they became colonizers themselves.
It's incredible that, you know, this manufacturing of the great illusion is to look outside rather than within, which is going on everywhere now. And as you moved through the world, you came from that part of the world in Southeast Asia area and Indonesia, and you came on a 2 or 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, a long day's trip, well, I'd say several days, and you wound up back in South America. But there was the circumstances, as you might say, is the same. But you missed and came into what is now being termed as the COVID-19. And you being in Santiago, now it's everywhere and people are paying attention to it. So, you know, here in the States, indigenous folks are seeing maybe this is the great equalizer, but yet is always bringing us back to what they are destroying, the indigenous mind, their sustainability to live with Earth, because They don't know how to do anything else. So here comes this little intelligent being that I say is the coronavirus to bring everybody back to Earth to understand the respect for this. So I'm hearing that from you somehow underneath. Am I correct with that?
Well, actually, to come back to my 8 days insane journey from Hong Kong, actually, to Santiago de Chile, to put it to perspective, I was working very intensively in Hong Kong for on several occasions because I see the riots that took place. It was absolutely injected by the West against China. You know, they do everything possible against China now. I mean, they are so horrified that Chinese system is superior to the Western one that they would risk even death of thousands of people in order to smear China. So I was in Hong Kong on my fourth or fifth visit, actually covering the issue, and suddenly I realized that I can hardly see because I brought with me my eyes when I was working in Borneo in Indonesia. They were attacked by parasites, my eyes and my guts and everything. So I was like half dead. I couldn't see. My stomach was destroyed. And there was coronavirus, of course, COVID-19 canceling flights everywhere. And my flight from Hong Kong to Korea, to South Korea, was canceled. So I was totally ruined. I had to actually fly south from Hong Kong to Bangkok, and then up to Korea again to join my original flight schedule to Amsterdam, and then to Suriname, and from Suriname through Brazil and Lima, Peru to Santiago de Chile. It was a horrible 8-day trip with coronavirus at my tail. Wow. And I was literally escaping because they were closing one airport after another, and then looking like I was, you know, with my eyes infected and all that. Of course, everybody was thinking that I'm sick, that I'm, who knows, maybe that's one of the symptoms of the coronavirus. So I was actually escaping from one city to another, just flying back to Chile where I'm based. Because I'm based in three places. I'm based in Japan, in Bangkok, and in Santiago de Chile. So I was basically commuting back to the place which I believed would be the safest and best place to heal and to kind of survive this coronavirus outbreak. So that's where I am right now, in Santiago de Chile, talking to you.
So once you're in Santiago, Chile, you know, the West here has gone with prison terms such as lockdown and house arrest, kind of the feeling that you're looking out from your jail cell outside and not able to go out there because you have to put on the garments or the uniform of a prisoner. Basically, you have a mask, you have, you know, gloves, and everything is not clean, in a sense. Is that happening in Santiago as well?
Yes, because you have to understand about one thing about Chile. Chile is a very rich country on paper. It's basically richer than some of the European Union countries, right? It had a coup like Indonesia in 1973 here against socialist President Allende. Pinochet was put to power by the West. But the coup here was based on the Indonesian coup in 65. So, you know, that's why I have a long history with both countries, because I'm studying what happened there and all that. So Chile, unlike Indonesia, is a rich country, but it also it is a country which is which implemented also extremely right-wing system. So it is the biggest inequality, it has the most unequally distributed incomes in the entire Latin America. And the reason it's not as bad as in many other places is because it's actually very rich and productive. So even if the distribution of wealth is horrible at least overall standard of living is relatively high. But Chile is following everything what the West is doing. So of course we are in the absolutely same situation as people in the UK are, or in the United States. Well, not in the United States, but in some places in Europe, there is a total lockdown, and you have to only few things are open, food stores, and you cannot even go to parks and all that. Let me just tell you one interesting thing about Chile. Before this COVID-19 began, there was a huge uprising, a revolution, a real revolution. People began fighting the neoliberal government on the streets, and they wanted to have their country back to where it was before the coup in 1973. They wanted socialism. Young people just clashed with police. 30 people died. More than 350 people lost their eyes because police was shooting pellets to the faces of protesters. You know, it was real beginning of the real civil war or revolution. And now, of course, this COVID-19 played perfectly to the hands of the government, of the right-wing President Piñera, who actually recently drove to the main square where the fight between police and the protesters was taking place, and he took selfie to the outrage of everybody, like saying, "Oh, see, I won. There is nobody there." So in some countries, this illness is actually used by the elites to oppress the revolutions and to oppress indigenous people. Because here also in Chile, you see the Mapuche Indians in the south, they were waking up also. They were ready to fight for their rights, and they even said on many graffitis that you can see all over Santiago that Chile is not our country. Because that's where the Spaniards first tried to destroy them, and then when they didn't manage, the German migrants began fighting them, and then Chilean state reduced them finally to the very dismal existence.
This is all incredible. I mean, there's so much to cover here. And I think due to radio time, Andre, is there something that we really need to hear, almost the silence, the elephant in the globe, the elephant in the room, if you will? It's almost like we are waiting. As I think you said something about as if there was a silence before the storm. Give us that thought.
Yes, you see the way I see the world, and I worked in 160 countries, and I'm constantly moving because my work depends directly on the testimonies of the people. You know, I'm a novelist. I don't want to write boring journalist reports. I mean, I write as a novelist, although I'm giving facts and analysis of the situation. The way I see the world is that there are countries, including China, including Russia, but also Venezuela, Cuba, and others, which are constantly smeared by the West. And they are doing much better job. And I think, you know, they are doing much better job working for their people and also for the people on this planet. In China, there is so-called ecological civilization. It's an incredible project, which is totally unknown in the West. I wrote the book with the US-based philosopher, Whiteheadian philosopher John Cobb Jr., which is the China and ecological civilization. He's very close to the government of China, and he helped to convince China about the ecological civilization and that it should be implemented. Russia and China are actually doing a lot for the developing world, which means actually colonized world until now. And more popular they are becoming in Africa, more popular they are becoming in Oceania or in other parts, a more aggressive the West, particularly the United States, is becoming. So I think there is a big hope, there is a growing unity and understanding of the countries that were brutalized by the West for centuries, that the situation cannot continue like this, that they have to defend each other and defend themselves. And we are, of course, writing about this. There is new media, very powerful media now all over the world, like RT in Russia. You know, half of London is watching RT. A lot of people in New York is watching them. You know, Press TV, the Telesur that is coming from Venezuela. So it's not anymore that it is just a dissident media somewhere in the West. No, the countries in that are not following the Western dictate, they are developing their own mass media. They are developing their own way of life. And I think that the West is finished. You know, there's more than 500 years of horrible, brutal colonialism and imposing, you know, basically plundering people of all they have. What I described is happening in Indonesia, for example, is a clear and direct continuation of the colonialist policy. Because Indonesia was the cradle of non-aligned movement since 1955. It was the country which was bringing together nations that didn't want to be actually brutalized by colonialism. And what did they do to them? They overthrew their government and they implemented the most terrible dictatorship imaginable. So I think people are watching and they are understanding. I think they are not afraid to speak anymore. And what is happening now with this COVID-19 in the West is also an eye-opener for many, many people, for hundreds of millions of people all over the world, because it is inept and it is extremely brutal way how these societies in the West are functioning. And if they really treat their own people like this now, you can imagine how they treat the people in their new colonies.
Mm.
So I think we are actually, I'm very optimistic. I think people like Trump are not going to nuke the whole planet, you know, in order to keep, in order to let it go, in order to prevent it from letting go. And it's a way, if they don't destroy the planet, then we have a great chance that things will change for better.
Andrei Vacek is a philosopher, a novelist, filmmaker, investigative journalist, traveling across the world, covering wars and these ideas and conflicts in dozens of these countries that we talked about today. Andrei, it's always an honor to have you, and we'll refer to your website. I know you're on Twitter and actually Patreon and other places where we can get a hold of you. I'd like to thank you for bringing your words again to the listeners out there in the so-called sustainable world. And I thank you again for being here on First Voices Radio.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
He was a warrior in every way. And he was always listening. A dedication to people's displaced. And he was always listening. If a little birdie flew into his face, he was always listening. And with the spirit of the ancient ways, he was always receiving. He said, come with me people, stand up with me people, as one and as equals, let's honor all people. Come with me people, stand up with me people, as one and as equals, let's honor all people, all people. Honor
just a name. Dedication to people displaced, and she was always listening. And if a lion moved through her space, she was always listening. And with the spirit of the ancient ways, she was always receiving. She said, come with me people, stand up with me people, as one and as equals, let's honor all people. Come with me people, stand up with me people, as one and as equals, let's honor all people. Come with me people, stand up with me people, as one and as equals, let's honor all people. Come with me people, stand up with me people, as one and as equals, let's honor all people, all people.
Voices said, Antichrist is anti-life, greed, death's agents taking command, society conditioned in death, death to the air, death to the water, death to the future, death in the mind. The voices said, people strung out in confusion, dancing at ends of industrial wires, reactionary lives, reactionary minds, forgetting who we are, disguising servitude, fooling ourselves in lies of freedom. The voices said, industrial needs, human beings don't really matter. Their labor does. Energy consumed. Submission in many forms is submission not recognized. Material prisons, racial prisons, sexual prisons, chemical prisons, system prisons, angry prisons, slamming cell doors shut in human minds. The voices said, we are Earth's children. The people must stand strong. Our will is our life. Man respect woman, brother help sister, young help old, relative help relative, nation help nation. The voices said, entering and leaving, we gather strength. When we know power, we are power. When we know peace, we are peace. When we know the time, We are the time.
A redesign of our culture, the vision of a global expansion of consciousness based upon the symbiotic relationships of nature and the caring capacity of the earth. Like a dream of a highly advanced civilization where all the intelligent management of the earth resources become the common heritage for humanity. Behold a new world where the laws of man and religion will be erased and replaced with a resource-based economy through renewable, sustainable geothermal energy, solar and wind energy, harnessed by the power of the sun, generates electricity that brings stability to the earth environmentally. The adversity of scarcity will be about us socially when we realize that we are all one species under the sun. Instead of weapons of mass destruction, we unleash weapons of mass creation. You must elevate your mind to a higher state of spiritual awareness and be aware of the emergent and symbiotic aspects of natural law and understand the changes consistent within all of nature caused by the forces of nature.
We are the sunshine, we are the light, elevating your mind. We are the sunshine, we are the light, it's our time to rise. We are the sunshine, we are the light, elevating your mind. In Akashala, can we begin? We begin to rise.
Tactic is proliferation of human preservation, architectural elevation. We stand in veneration of the goddess Venus crossing as we plot this air voyage. Elite fleet launch with clairvoyance, inspired by ancient artifacts. Practice the latent artifacts, oblivious to how bleak the future seems. The youth stay geeked, play meek, glued to computer screens with feudal dreams. This is groupthink versus global brain, divine intelligence, irrelevance, and social strain. The difference between generosity and charity in a world where clarity a rarity. They stare at me atop the pyramid, arms out shouting namaste with a soul that's lighter than the feather of my eye. Rest of the world screaming, look what I got. Theory is be free, leading exponent is me. All is one, one is all. Do what thou will, shall be the whole of the law. Innocence predates the guilt created by the great fall. So which do you choose, pure life or more strife? The core sacrifice, but you're the one that pays the price. Forget what they soothsay, the prophecy of doomsday was more like April Fool's Day. Not the end of the world, but the end of the age. Beware the wrath of the sage and do the math on the page.
We are the sunshine, we are the light, elevating your mind. We are the sunshine, we are the light, it's our time to rise. We are the sunshine, we are the light, elevating your mind. In Akashala, can we begin? We begin to rise.
Open the gates, welcome to the purest states with limitless space. Elevate to a plentiful place that's resource based. You can't even catch a case, for all basic necessities are supplied by Earth's abundance. Intelligent management of her resources have advanced human civilization. Entire population receive universal health care. I know it was unfair, I know it was that monetary system you couldn't bear. And they asked your organs and stressed you out. You lost your hair, but have no fear. Gone all the days of the tyrants ruling square. Sure on your work day, increase the vacation time to utilize the mind's full potential. Vehicles hydro with the sonar magnets to eliminate accidents. So we need no petrol. All state nationwide, I got gold. Just ask Jock Fresco about the technological takeover of cybernated society, solely meant to improve all living quality, eliminating all superficial boundaries set up by nations to perpetuate oppression. A blessing will it be when the meek inhabit the planet with no deprivation? The weather gets no application fee. Just grab you a copy, you're the best that money can't buy. This is your future by design.
Free me, free, free, free.
cage locked tight.
Circle near an old oak tree at the times appointed by the seasons of the earth and the phases of the moon. In the center stood a woman, equal with the others and respected for her worth. One of the many we call the witches, and the teachers of the wisdom of the earth. And the people grew through the knowledge she gave them, herbs to heal their bodies, spells to make their spirits whole. Can't you hear them chanting healing incantations, calling forth the wise ones, celebrating in dance and song? As is the star today, Inanna, Isis the star today, Anna, Hecate Demeter, Kali, Inanna, Isis the star today, Anna, Hecate Demeter, Kali, Inanna. There were those who came to power through domination, and they bonded in the worship of a dead man on a cross. They sought control of the common people by demanding allegiance to the Church of Rome. And the Pope declared an inquisition. It was war against the women whose power they feared. In this holocaust against the nature people, 9 million European women died. And the tale is told of those who by the hundreds, holding together, chose their death in the sea, while chanting the praises of the Mother Goddess, a refusal of betrayal, women were dying to be free.
and the men still burn her, stripping her down with mining and the poisons of their war. So to us, the earth is a healer, a teacher, a mother, a weaver of a web of light that keeps us all alive. She gives us the vision to see through the chaos. She gives us the courage. It is our will to survive.
Listening to KBOO Portland,